know if that time
is up to prolong. Lose somebody?
Yeah, I mean.
It'll go long.
Hey, Bill, is Duluth there?
Nails will end up driving back to the
park. Is Duluth there? Is Duluth there? Okay. Are you ready?
City of Lakes.
Hey, Sandy, I'm going to start here. Good afternoon. I call to order this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee. Today is Tuesday, March 6th. The first order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Fabian moves approval of the minutes from February 27th. Is there any corrections, changes, additions, or subtractions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes for the 27th are adopted. Next order of business is approval of the minutes from February 28th. And Representative Sundin moves approval of the minutes from February 28th. Any corrections, changes, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, we have a couple items on our agenda today. We have two bills as well as an overview of the Duluth Steam Plant and the Renewable Development Account. Representative Fabian, are you ready to go?
I can be, sure.
Is Representative Keel here? Oh, no, Representative Keel is here. I'm sorry, we're going to start with, because
yep.
She's not on the committee. So, Representative Keel, I didn't see you. You're in black, hiding there. So, Representative Keel, we'll start with you. And Representative Fabian moves House File 917 for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Keel, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you hearing this. Representative Fabian also has a couple of these industries in his neck of the woods. So we are blessed with a residential biomass heating system, and that's the tax credit we are talking about. Minnesota is blessed with an abundant source of agricultural and forest-based biomass. This renewable plant material and residues is used to produce energy. Biomass thermal energy utilizes this sustainability source biomass for space and domestic water heating, process heat, and thermal portion of combined heat and power. I've got other people that are here to testify. I just would like to share with you, I neglected to check with my local school district, but when I was on the school board, we heated our pool with one of these biomass burners, and they started out with corn, and everybody knows what happened to corn. The price went up. A little costly to heat your pool that way. In fact, they had a hard time even keeping the pool at the right temperature. It got a little warm, so it was very efficient. But in my community, there's also a company called Sun Opta. Was Dahlgren sunflower seeds at one point. And so what they did was burn the sunflower hulls, which the plant had to get rid of anyway. So it was a win-win for the community, and it heated our pool and worked very well. It's very efficient. But I have other gentlemen here with me today, and I would like them to talk more about the industry.
Well, so first of all, just one quick change.
Yes.
So Representative Fabian modifies his motion that House File 917 be recommended to pass and refer to the Tax Committee. And also Representative Fabian just told me that he has an A3 author's amendment to delete everything. So Representative Fabian is going to move that A3 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author would like. Is there any discussion on it?
So move.
Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. So, Representative Keel, to your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I love the osmosis in this committee.
He's a smart guy. He's all hand gestures.
He is. I think somebody should tell Roxanne he communicates that way, too.
Easy.
With that, I would like to welcome Mr. Turson, Chris Turson, and I'll let him explain the...
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members. My name is Chris, C-H-R-I-S. Last name is Turson, T-U-R-E-S-O-N. I'm in corporate relations with Central Boiler Incorporated. They're a small manufacturing company located in Greenbush, Minnesota. It's a town of about 800 people. It's the town that I grew up in. I was employed with Central Boiler for approximately seven years as a full-time employee. This summer, the first time Central Boiler had some layoffs, and the layoffs were because basically the new devices that we are building and are now mandated to build at Central Boiler have become very, very cost prohibitive for the people who are burning wood. A little history. Starting in the year, probably in the early 2000s, three of the manufacturers located in northern Minnesota, Woodmaster, Heatmore, and Central Boiler, entered into a voluntary participation agreement with the EPA to produce higher efficiency, low emissions wood burning. The concept behind that was to clean up the air and to be able to comfortably afford and heat your home. As we got into that and realized that the technologies that we were putting into wood burning were going to increase the prices of that, at the same time the EPA went about with some rulemaking. So in 2015, all of the manufacturers were required to build only high-efficiency, low-emission boilers. What happened because of that is that the price of boilers has now gone through potentially up to a 30% increase. So rural homeowners, rural businesses who were using our hydronic heaters to heat their homes are now unable to potentially afford the newest and best technologies. The manufacturers up in northern Minnesota have really tried to market these devices, really tried to keep the cost low, but I believe we've priced ourselves almost out of the market. When you look at what a tax credit could do to a rural homeowner who's trying to affordably heat their home with one of these devices, it's really going to spur them to invest in the new equipment. As everyone transitions into a cleaner, more efficient economy across the United States, and historically, you know, every other renewable energy out there, solar, wind, has received a little bump. And what our consumers need is a little bump. They need that little extra money that's going to prompt them to get into the newest technologies. You know, the efficiencies on these newer units can run as high as 90%. The emissions are very, very low. So as of 2015, the only thing that allowed to be sold in a residential setting is the newer, cleaner hydronic heaters. I believe that this bill would go a long way. Across the United States and some of the northern states like New York, Massachusetts, actually in the state of Minnesota, there's a program called Project Stove Swap that was initiated in 17 counties in northeast Minnesota up by Duluth. What that gave is a push. There was funds available for consumers to swap out old furnaces, old stoves. I just saw an article in Grand Rapids paper that said over 200 furnaces and stoves had been swapped out, and that was through some upfront funding for these rural consumers who rely upon wood heat. So I believe what this bill would do would be another example of what you will have now is the consumer who is possibly looking at replacing an older unit, having the money or the affordability to be able to afford one of these new appliances, highly efficient, burns wood, it's renewable energy, and it supports three great businesses in northwest Minnesota who are currently hurting and have had to lay off employees, like I said, including myself. I was full-time there for 7 years. I'm now part-time with them working. So obviously Central Boiler believes that this would go a long way to helping those businesses and helping rural consumers.
Thank you. Representative Kill, do you have any other testifiers?
No, I believe not.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to members' questions. Questions on House File 917 as amended. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, thank you for bringing this forward. Chris, thanks for being here to testify. You know, you referred to Central Boiler as a small manufacturing company. By a lot of standards, probably is a small manufacturing company, but in the city of Greenbush and the area and the Rosa County, this is no small company. This is a good company. It's a major employer in the area. They provide good benefits. The Braziers are fantastic employers, and they're trying real hard to, make these things. I used to heat my home with wood back when my boys were home, and they could help me with the I was referred to as a weekend woodpecker. That's what they called ourselves. You know, we'd go out on the weekends, and we'd cut wood, and we'd stoke the stove during the week. But what is the cost? You said it's up about 30%. Can you walk me through a progression of how the new requirements for emissions have increased the cost and give me some actual dollar figures for, like, the Central Boiler Classic, and now you've moved on to the newer ones?
Well, just a boiler classic model, that would be the older technology. That
right.
would not be a gasification furnace. In the beginning, it would be between $3,000 to $5,000. You're looking at the new classic edges, some of the new technologies, starting at $9,500, potentially up to $12,000, including installation costs.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I support this for a variety of reasons, but the other thing I wanted to point out was, this is the result of people who are trying to use some natural resources to heat their homes, to heat their shops, to heat their garages, to heat their barns and so forth. And these are renewable resources. And they tried to do the right thing, and now a lot of these people are getting priced out of the market. And it's not impacting just them, but it's also impacting our local manufacturers and the people that work there. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Mahoney.
I'm looking at the thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is to Representative Keel. I'm looking at the fiscal note, I think, here, and it's got a cost of $1.9 million a year. And as I look down towards the bottom, it says the average price is estimated at $2,700 per unit for an average credit of $900. And I think I just heard numbers that say the price of the units is much more. So what's the cost of this particular bill per year?
Representative Keel, or we can go to the rep. Do you have a copy of the revenue note, Representative Keel?
I do. I'm looking at it right here.
Yeah, so beyond the, Representative Mahoney, you're saying beyond the $1.9 million, is there an extra cost, you mean, or? What's your question, Representative Mahoney? I don't understand.
Mr. Chair, I just heard that the new units are, I didn't hear perfectly what the witness was saying the actual cost of a new unit is, but I thought it was more than $2,700. And if they're basing this fiscal note off of $2,700 per unit, which is about the price that my constituents pay for a natural gas furnace, I guess I'm just wondering, is this fiscal note correct at $1.9 million or close to it? And is that $2,700 correct, or is your statement correct?
I'm going to ask Mr. Thurston to respond.
Sure. This is actually kind of a question for the Department of Revenue, but that's okay. You can
yes.
go ahead, Mr. Thurston.
Mr. Chair, I believe what happens a lot is that there are wood stoves, and then what we produce is what's called a hydronic heater. They are completely different units. A wood stove is something that goes inside your house. A hydronic heater sets outside your house. They're made that way because they're a lot more safer. Obviously, in the winter, you hear terrible stories about people heating their homes indoor wood stoves. So, from what I've seen in change-out programs, that looks like the average price is probably looking at a wood stove rather than one of our residential hydronic heaters.
Oh, so the assumptions of the revenue note are probably not. We don't want to say they're inaccurate, but they could use some refinement in the tax committee. Because right now they list the average price as $2,700 per unit is the assumption they use. So that's not a question you have to answer. But
So,
any other questions for members of the committee?
Sure.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question to the manufacturing testifier there. I'm just wondering, you mentioned the safety issue there. These units are stationed outside the house. Are they UL listed? I know I've got a and insert my fireplace. I'm a weekend woodpecker as well. But I'm just wondering, are those UL listed? I'm just worried about the safety, concerned about the safety issue.
Mr. Chair, yes, they are UL safety listed with manufacturer's recommendation for setbacks and things like that. So.
Thank you.
When you write a name,
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did make it in here, but anyway, I looked into this a couple of years ago too, and if you did mention the increased regulations when I was gone, I apologize for being redundant. But what you have to meet in terms of manufacturing specs for emission control, things like that, is that coming from EPA or from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency?
It's a test fire.
Mr. Chair, that comes from the United States EPA in what's called the New Source Performance Standards, which were adopted in 2015. Under the voluntary program that we participated in, that's when we were able to establish the testing procedures to get the EPA to understand how they worked. And then most of that was included in the final regulation, which became effective in 2015.
Okay. Seeing no further, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And did those regulations also include natural gas and electric boilers and furnaces? Because I thought they did. I thought the EPA put higher standards on all home heating units. So,
Mr. Chair, yeah, this was specifically towards new source performance standards for residential hydronic heaters. We were subpart Q. I think the wood stoves were subpart A. So it was its own separate standalone rule. Apart from,
Mr. Chair, I believe all of the heaters, and I'm a pipe fitter, so I kind of get a little bit of this. Probably can scratch the surface, but if I remember right, all of the residential heating units are required to meet higher standards. Now, yours is an emission standard issue, but that falls into creating a higher standard. So I guess what this is a local bill, which I've done a couple of the local bills myself. I want everyone to know, but you're not being picked on by one group. I mean, everybody got picked on, so to speak, by the increase in energy efficiency. So I want that clear here. But I'm not asking actually a question anymore. Mr. Chair, can you make sure that we all get a updated fiscal note on this when they use the right dollar figure?
I know.
So when this goes to the tax committee, in the event that it's scheduled for a hearing there, there will be an updated revenue note to reflect changes in that. So it's not a fiscal note. It's a revenue note. But we'll make sure that they, when that's heard in the tax committee, that they get that updated. And then I think you serve on taxes as well, right?
No, I unfortunately got off of taxes after I sat through a six-hour hearing where they talked about their children and everything but taxes.
Gotcha. So I serve on the tax committee. I'll make sure that we, if and when that happens, we'll get it sent
Thank
over
you.
To this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thought that was a staffer. Oh, Representative Munson. I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead. Got to haze a little bit, Representative Munson. Sorry. Are we going to get you your name tag, by the way, soon? Or
Minlars will have it by June.
Representative Munson.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little concerned about the cost for the bill. So it looks like there's $5.7 million expected to cost over the next 3 years. And I think that this number from the Department of Revenue is probably accurate because it looks at all biomass heating, which is the internal furnaces in addition to the hydronic furnaces that are outside. Now, I used to heat my house with an outdoor wood boiler for many years. And so my installation, which I did myself, but the stuff alone cost me probably $8,000 or $9,000. So can I get an estimated number of units that these three companies sell that would be that would qualify for this credit? Like, do you have estimates of your sales numbers?
To the testifier.
Sorry,
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Awkward position. I would hate to guesstimate since I was only one of the companies what the total numbers are. I know in the New Source Performance Standard rulemaking process, there was an economic study done by NERA Consulting. That's part of the record on the NSPS, and I believe those numbers would be in there, the estimated numbers of how many were out there. That's probably the best place I could refer you to.
Okay.
Yeah. Representative Munson, a follow-up?
Oh, no, thank you.
Seeing no further comments or questions, Representative Keel, any closing comments?
Yes, just a couple. I want to remind members that there are about 250,000 Minnesotans who don't have access to natural gas. And if you don't heat with gas, especially in rural Minnesota, you're left with fuel oil, propane, and wood. Wood, being a farmer, is just like my product. It is renewable and plentiful in Minnesota. So something that we consider using often, and many people like Representative Fabian said, you know, can go out and chop wood, and a good source, a good way to clean up our natural resources when they need to be. So with that, members, I hope you consider this and would support this bill going to the tax committee.
Thank you. Representative Fabian renews his motion to have House File 917 as amended, recommended to pass and refer to the tax committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and you're on your way to the tax committee.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian, House File 1535, and my understanding is that we're actually going to be laying this over today. We're not going to be sending it to taxes. So Representative Fabian moves House File 1535 for possible inclusion or in a later bill or perhaps later action by the committee. And Representative Fabian also moves the A1 amendment to get the bills, looks like just conforming the days to the more accurate days. So any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Representative Fabian, to your bill as amended for possible inclusion in a later bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce Jeff Washburn here also to help with the testimony. As most people know, in much of the state of Minnesota, particularly in rural Minnesota, where we do have some growth going on, there are some issues with regards to workforce housing, and we've seen that in a number of communities around the state. This is another attempt on my part and others to see if we can't help to make some more workforce housing available to different entities. And what we're doing in the bill is basically, if you take a look at the bill, the underlying things, we're making three fairly minor changes to it in terms of policy. We're including cities and tribal governments. You can see that. And then we're also doing loans in addition to grants. And that's the main part of this bill as it relates to this committee. When we get to taxes, then we'll have to do some other things there. And there was some technical errors on how the bill was drafted, so that's part of the reason why it's being laid over today, and I'm guessing staff can walk us through some of that. Obviously, this is a bill that we had last year, so the A1 amendment is just to update the dates that are in last year's bill. That's the reason for that. So,
well, thank you, Representative Chair Fabian. Did you have any other testifiers or anyone that would like to testify?
Yeah, like I said, I have Jeff Washburn here. He'd like to talk to the bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Certainly. Thank you. My name is Jeff Washburn. I'm the executive director of the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis. I'm also a member of this affiliated organization called WHOM, or Workforce Homeownership Minnesota. As Representative Fabian had mentioned, this is something that we've been working on, this fund, for the last few years, looking to create a dedicated source of affordable home ownership dollars that would come from a capture of growth of the mortgage registry and deed tax for a duration of 10 years to essentially what we project is to double the number of affordable home ownership units across the state, with an equal amount of those units being placed in the metro area and equal to greater Minnesota. This WHOM group is affiliated with has affiliation of community land trusts, habitat organizations, community action programs across the state, manufactured housing organizations, as well as several nonprofit affordable home ownership developers and providers across the state. And I think especially, as the representative has shared, there's challenges that differ across each of our communities, but these funds would make a significant impact in our ability to serve more households in each of those communities as it best would be served. Just a couple quick items to note is that our organizations, we did some work with the University of Minnesota, and through their research, they shared that our organizations have the ability, and we're currently serving community of color households at a rate that's seven times greater that of what the local markets are serving, and especially, I think, in a state that hovers, unfortunately, toward the top or the bottom, however you look at it, of the disparities across the nation related to the differences between white and community of color homeowners. We believe that this is just a really good investment. If it's working and if we're already performing at seven times the rate of local communities, it seems like a great opportunity for us to double down and try and chip away at that huge disparity that exists. Additionally, while this would double the amount of funding for affordable home ownership, we estimate that this increase really on an annual basis, this growth would equate to somewhere between $4 and $13 million a year, which is a lot of money, but relative to the investments made by the State Housing Finance Agency, the amount invested in home ownership really is a small amount. This effectively would double the amount that we'd be able to apply for on an annual basis, and additionally, it would free up additional dollars for other investments across that affordable housing spectrum. So we really do see it as a win-win for the communities that we're serving and the households that we're able to assist into home ownership.
Well, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Washburn. Is there any other testifiers, Representative Fabian, that you have today?
I do not, no.
No. Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify to this bill? Seeing that there are none, I'll open this up to member questions. Any member questions on this? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a note to Representative Fabian, you introduced mm-hmm. this as a with a not surprising emphasis on Greater Minnesota. I'm hoping that this is a bill that the metro area and even the urban core can work together with you. I think back to the subprime mortgage lending meltdown and the, I forget the number, hundreds of millions of dollars in assets that were stripped from low-income homeowners in the urban core. And that's a multi-generational problem. That family now does not have that home to, for instance, take a loan against to help a kid get into college. It doesn't have that home as an asset as the owners are looking towards retirement. It doesn't have that home as an asset to build from. And I appreciate the focus on building home ownership and utilizing organizations, land trusts, Habitat, community action partnerships, who know how to do this work already. There's not a learning curve. They know how to do this work, and they know how to do it well. So, again, I'm hoping that we can work together on this as a statewide initiative. Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, this is this Workforce Home Ownership Fund is a complement to existing programs over at MHFA. Mm-hmm. Through their grant, the challenge program and so forth. I don't know all the exact ins and outs of that, but I do know, too, that here we are looking at roughly a 60-40 split, and I'm sure that Mr. Washburn could maybe address that a little bit more closely. But, we are definitely looking here and, of course, also outside. I was looking up some of the statutes and so forth, and it specifically addresses metropolitan, non-metropolitan areas. And, of course, metropolitan is defined in statute as a seven-county metro area. Thank you, Mr. Zimple, for your help on that. I appreciate that. So, there definitely is a focus. And I don't know particularly what it's like in the metropolitan area doing workforce housing, but in rural Minnesota, it's extremely difficult. I don't know all the ins and outs because of some of the different programs at MFHA, but I've heard over and over again from people who are, whether they're with Community Action or they're with the city, or with the business who are trying to do these different projects, they just are so complicated. And so we're trying to, through the Workforce Home Ownership Fund, we're trying to streamline some of that process. In 16, there was a small infusion of cash of $750,000, put into this new program. MHFA received over $6 million in requests for the 750. So in this bill, what we're trying to do is to capture some of the growth in the deed and registry tax, and I'm sure when we get to taxes, we'll have a fairly lengthy discussion about, you know, about that. So, and I'm, you know, I'm willing to do that. I understand where we're at here now and what we're doing, but this is kind of the opening salvo.
Thank you. Representative Naquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I enjoy your bill. I had a constituent in earlier today talking about this in particular. I wanted to come back to something that Mr. Washburn and I talked about, which is the racial disparities. And so we talk about that a lot in this committee. We have the highest disparities in the nation. And I would never want to amend your bill to maybe have, like, specific, you know, target amounts of certain posse folks to get into homes, people of color and indigenous people. But I was wondering if that could be part of the report back to the legislature. You talked a little bit about, Mr. Washburn, about the work that's been done getting people of color into homes. Representative Fabian, when you do this report, subdivision 6, I was just wondering if that could be part of the report so we could just see how this is moving forward and addressing the racial disparities in home ownership.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair and Representative Maquaid, I don't know why it couldn't be. We could talk to MHFA and see what, and maybe they already do that. You know, I'm not exactly sure.
Representative Naquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
I would just love to work with you on that, sure. Representative Fabian. Yeah.
Representative Fabian, did you have a final word on that or no?
And one other thing.
No, and this is not a final word for the bill. Final word to her comment.
And the other thing is, too, is I wanted to point out on the growth in the deed and registry tax, the growth is always measured against the previous year. There's no base year that's being used, and then it's calculated on top of that. It's just whatever it was from the previous year.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am kind of surprised that there was no opposition from the realtors, because every other time that we try to do something with the deed tax, they come down here like they're very vocal. I had another euphemism, but I better not use it. So I hope that they follow through on that one. Any of the next times we go after the deed tax and mortgage tax or mortgage fees. I have two questions. To the testifier, you talked about freeing up other funds, and that is a worry for me. And so can I ask you what you meant by freeing up other funds?
Mr. Washburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, what I meant by that is each year the State Housing Finance Agency has a pool of funds. It's currently called the Impact Fund. Both multifamily or rental housing and affordable home ownership organizations effectively put in applications for those funds. My hope would be, I guess this is just a hope, that pie maybe gets a little bit bigger so that we're still able to double the amount of affordable ownership units that we're able to do through a dedicated source of funds, and the agency would continue to invest in the other affordable housing aspects of the affordable housing spectrum. Speaking for the ownership side or portion of the spectrum, there's always, I mean, speaking for my own organization, we could easily double the number of households that we're able to serve, and I think a lot of my colleagues who are working on this would say the same. But I also believe that folks that work on homelessness issues or on affordable rental would equally say the same thing. So there hasn't been enough. There continues to not be enough to serve the constituents and residents of our communities. And I think that the more that we can put into affordable housing as a whole across the state is a good thing for our state, and especially in ways that we can create opportunities for households to do better for themselves and their families and create a continuum. It's so very important to look ahead as to where a household who's currently in affordable rental, if they're going to move forward, we got to create an entree for them to move up that continuum. And so often it's too daunting of a jump to go from an affordable rental to a marketplace rental or clearly to ownership. And what we're trying to do is create those steps for them to be able to achieve that.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, then to the author of the bill, you might want to consider some wording in here that this, what's the term, is a supplement, not a not supplant funding that's already in place. But that's neither here nor there. The other piece that I have for the author is Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has some problems working with manufactured housing. Is that going to be a concern? And if it is, have you figured out a way to address that in your particular in 1535?
Mr. Washburn.
No, this is for the author.
Yep. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we do have that. There is references to that in the bill. I'm looking for where we have the. Give me the question one more time, Representative Dabney.
Well,
the specific
Representative
question
Dabney.
Was to.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Fabian, in the past, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has some rules in it that make it more difficult to work with manufactured housing and to finance it. I'm not sure how this bill changes that or takes that away from as an impediment to financing manufactured housing, which frankly is, you know, that's a third the price or half the price of a stick home, and is way more affordable for some people that are looking for a long-term stable home to stay in and raise their family in and retire in. So in your bill, if you don't have it, and if you can't find it, that's fine, but if you don't have it, that is something that you probably need to put in here that allows this fund, or any of their funds, really, we would hope, to be used on manufactured homes so that they could finance them in some fashion or another. Because right now, it's very difficult for housing finance to do that, and it shouldn't be.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I appreciate your comment, and I believe that maybe staff can help out here on line 1.20. Residential housing, I believe, includes manufactured homes. And I apologize for putting staff on.
Anna Schillinghouse Research.
Proceed.
I would have to look into that further, but I can get back to the committee about that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if by chance it doesn't, we can, you know, we can make some adjustments to get that too. But
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, in my short time on trying to figure out housing, I suspect that that doesn't cover it, and I wasn't trying to question or shoot down your bill. What I'm trying to get you to do is take a look at it and figure out a way to make sure that your bill addresses manufactured housing, particularly in greater Minnesota, because that is that's going to be affordable housing. And we should allow people to get state help to finance it. So I don't think your bill addresses it, so I'm asking you two things, making sure that this money isn't used to supplant other money, and two, make sure that manufactured housing in some way or another, we address that issue and allow Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to finance manufactured housing, particularly in greater Minnesota, the metro area, the nine-county metro area. A couple of the things that they've done over the manufactured housing in the metro area has been kind of disgusting, but I think it's a big issue for greater Minnesota. So I would just ask that you take a look at that and see if there's a way that you can work that into your bill between here and taxes.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will. I know Deb Keel has Hallmark Homes in her district, so I'm sure we'll take a look at that. But.
Okay. Members, further questions? Seeing none, Representative Fabian, you have a final word.
A couple of things real quickly. This, as I said, is a very difficult situation in much of rural Minnesota. We have the benefit right now of looking at some major expansion in several communities actually surrounding the city of Thief River Falls where the DigiKey expansion is going on.
I think the other thing to point out, if you look in the bill on lines 2.10 to 2.2, it talks about local contributions, non-state resources, you know, having an advantage in the grant process. And then the other thing to Representative Dabney on line 2.13 and 2.14, the agency shall attempt to make grants and loans in approximately equal amounts to applicants outside and within the metropolitan area. And realizing that you can't get it exact, so that's why the language was drafted that way in 16.
All right. With that, Representative Fabian renews his motion to lay this bill over for future consideration. Next, members, I believe we are moving onward to Representative Chair Garofalo. All those in favor?
Yeah, don't vote on that.
Roll call, Ms.
Yeah, thank goodness we're not voting on that, right? Right. So, okay, so members, next on the agenda is we have an overview of the Duluth Steam Plant. Members will remember this was a project that we heard before the committee last year. It was originally contained in the House position as part of the end of session negotiations. It ended up receiving a grant through the now reformed renewable development account. And so we're just going to do a quick overview on where that project stands, the funding, and we'll go from there. So welcome to the committee. Please state your names for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, Rep. Liz Olson. And just want to say thank you for the opportunity to discuss the work of updating the Duluth steam system and converting the system to a more efficient hot water system. And by way of review, this is a $44 million project, and the 2017 request was for $21 million. And as the chairman just mentioned, the capital budget bill from last session included $15 million from the renewable development account to begin the work of the project. And so things are moving forward, and you'll have a chance to hear that. And we're also requesting $7 million of state funds this year to complete the funding package for the project. I have a bill, House File 310, which represented the full request from last year in the form of appropriations funds. And ultimately, we'll need to amend that bill to reduce the request from the 21 to the now remaining $7 million. And so, Chair Garofalo, I'll visit with you at a later time about how we process that request and get it onto capital investments. So I have with me here Mayor Emily Larson and David Montgomery, the city's chief administrative officer, to tell you about the steam plant project and where things stand in terms of the project's development. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, members of the committee. My name is Emily Larson. I serve the city of Duluth as mayor. And I am really grateful to be here today. So first of all, thank you for your investment last year, and I'm happy to give you a little overview, and then we will invite Dave Montgomery, our chief administrative officer, to provide a little more information. Thank you for giving us time before your committee today to bring you up to speed on our Duluth steam plant project. Our steam system serves all of our greater downtown district's heating needs. Much of this infrastructure is now in excess of 80 years old and is in desperate need of replacement. As we upgrade the system, we are converting from steam to hot water, which is much more efficient. The project is also being coordinated with another major infrastructure project in the city of Duluth, the replacement of our main street through downtown, Superior Street. This is truly a once-in-a-generation opportunity to make a fundamental improvement to our infrastructure. Once the Superior Street project is completed, it would be truly impractical for us to replace and improve the district heating system without undoing all of the important and expensive work of replacing Superior Street. The conversion from steam to hot water is going to dramatically increase the efficiency of our system, creating 360-degree steam for the current once-through system provides about 48% efficiency. With our upgrade to hot water, heated to 250 degrees, we will achieve 67% efficiency by creating a closed-loop system, which will allow for the recapture of water to be reheated and sent back through the system rather than having that steam cool and condense and be channeled through the wastewater system for treatment and discharge right back into Lake Superior. In total, we will reduce water consumption in our system by 20 million gallons per year. I know you will want to hear about where things stand with the project, and so I'm going to invite David Montgomery with us to share with you some of the progress that we have seen and the work that we have been undertaken in the coming months with the Phase 1 funding that was secured in 2017. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Montgomery. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is David Montgomery. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Duluth. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you again for having us here and update you on this project. I want to tell you about what we've accomplished since the 2017 session and how we are proceeding with the work on the conversion of our steam system to a hot water system. We've, to date, worked out the details of our grant agreement with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, and Minnesota Management and Budget. That took a little while to work through because of the funding process that we went through, but we have executed our grant agreement and are ready to move forward. Bids for the Superior Street project, which includes all of the work on the steam system upgrades and pipe replacement, went out in January, and we just got the bids back last week for the project and have awarded the contractor and have are happy to report that we came in right around where we expected to, favorable to the expectation by a little bit, and we're ready to continue moving. We have not waited for this major bid process to move forward with this project. We've already undertaken and completed a considerable amount of the design work for the project and have invested significantly in improvements at the steam plant itself. You should have a short handout in your packets, which kind of lays out the project again and where we've been with the project. Of note in that handout is a description on the last page of all of the additional efforts we've undertaken. A lot of meat and potatoes kind of work, such as replacing valves and pumps and hot water returns and all the things that are going to increase the operational efficiency of the plant and the system and really add to the benefits that will come once we fully convert to a hot water system. What those enhancements have done to date have allowed us, for example, between the months of April and November of this year, to use natural gas 100% for all of the steam needs generated by the system during those months. We've burned no coal from the period April to November, reducing 29,000 tons of coal, reducing carbon by 35,000 tons. And all of the other emissions reductions that go with that. What it's also done for us is this winter, as cold as it's been in December, January, and early February, for the first time ever, the system was able to operate on only three of our four boilers. We burn coal in the winter in the cold months because of the energy that it's able to generate, but we've only had to burn three out of the four boilers. And that's the first time that has happened. And again, this is going to aid us going forward once we do the full conversion of the system. We've also, last fall, completed significant work on Michigan Street. And I've also, you should have also a series of photos in your packet showing that work with the pipes going in. This is the connection from the plant, which is over on the Canal Park side of the freeway, going under the freeway over to the Michigan Street side so that we're getting all of that work done. We got that completed so that we are ready to proceed with the Superior Street work this spring. We're going to reroute traffic on Michigan, so we needed that work done so we can use Michigan as our reroute while Superior Street is torn up. So that was a significant amount of work we did and completed last fall in preparation of the project that we're ready to start on this April or May. Weather depending on when frost comes out of the ground. So we are very grateful for the legislature's financial support during the last session, and we are positioning ourselves to move as quickly as possible this spring with the project, where we will begin on the western end of Superior Street, the first four or five blocks, and we are now seeking the final $7 million of state funds so that we can complete the total funding package and have that package in place as we're securing all the final work to get this done. As the mayor mentioned, this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to make a dramatic improvement in long-life public infrastructure, which will serve the Duluth community and its downtown for years to come. We'd be happy to respond to any questions the committee might have, and again, want to extend our thanks for providing this funding to get us moving on this project.
Thank you. Representative Olson, do you have any additional testifiers?
I do not.
Okay. Are there any members of the committee have questions? Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Olson, Mayor Larson. I think this was a big project for us to work on last year, and in making the adjustments we did to the Minnesota Made Solar Program, unfortunately, Representative O'Neill, who is not here right now, was very helpful in that as well, but it's a good project for the region. They hit the ground running, and I think we're seeing that pay dividends for it, and I hope we can finish up the rest of it this year.
Thank you. And Representative Metza, as everyone in the committee knows, we've always been a long-term advocate for the entire region of northeast Minnesota, not just your district.
So, thank you for that recognition, Mr. Chair.
So, yeah, as far south as Chisago County, we know you've advocated for. So, I'm sorry. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, large body.
Mr.
Chair,
follow-up?
Yes, are we going to have TV soon? We can be on?
Oh, I think we're on TV today.
Great.
So, Representative Baker.
Thank you.
That's an in-kind contribution, I think. I don't know. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson, for bringing this update to us. And, again, welcome, Mayor Larson. It's great to see you back again. Mm-hmm. Question I have is, back in Wilmer, we actually are removing our water heat system. You've decided, and we have, along with you, have partnered with you to make sure this is the right thing going forward. It really sounds amazingly efficient. And are you projecting rates for customers would actually be adjusted that way, too? I'm kind of curious as to what the outlook might be for customer rates going forward, if you wouldn't mind.
To the testifier.
Thank you, Representative Baker. What I can say is, our projections right now, with the efficiencies we've made in the plant already and with the closed-loop system that is going to go in, we expect the energy component to customers to be reduced between 25 and 30% with this project. And in addition, we're working on other things going forward continually that we think will have, you know, additional savings opportunities as well. But we are projecting a 25 to 30% fuel component reduction in our customers' bills.
Baker.
Congratulations. That's great to hear, and we don't hear that going in that direction very often, so good work. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to any of the testifiers there, I'm just wondering about capacity of this system. Is it designed so you can actually expand your service to, let's say, a big expansion that could occur in Duluth?
The testifier.
Thank you for that question. We have looked at this system, and again, with the efficiencies involved and with the conversion to hot water, it provides much more opportunity for expansion and increased thermal capacity that steam does not provide. So, yes, the answer is yes, we do expect to handle any enhancements that may come down the road in development in providing thermal energy to those new buildings and customers.
It was on Sunday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that shows great foresight on your part there. So, thank you.
And in the event that there was a large infrastructure project in Duluth, I presume that infrastructure investment would be scheduled at the same time as this work, so you guys could leverage efficiencies of not ripping up the same roads twice or stuff like that. Is that correct?
Thank you, Chair Garofalo. Hypothetically, yes, those conversations would occur, and we would be on the front end of discussions in that entire design phase and would likely have that coordination involved.
Yeah, the best part of the room is like 10%. The best part of this is 10% of the room gets the joke, and the other 90% is like, what are they talking about? So, okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Representative Wilson, any closing comments?
No, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much for your presentation. We look forward to hearing from you in the future. All right, members, next what we're going to do is we're going to have an overview. We're going to have an overview of the changes that were made to the formerly known as the former Renewable Development Fund, now the Renewable Development Account. We have an overview from House Nonpartisan Research and Fiscal Staff, and I believe that we have representatives of Xcel Energy available here to answer questions if those are if they're needed. But so we'll start with nonpartisan staff and Mr. Eloff, Mr. Zempel, whichever one of you wants to go ahead and start off. I think we'll start with Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. I want to touch on three topics today, a brief discussion of what the RDF, the Renewable Development Fund, is, talk a little bit about the 2017 changes that were made last session, and finally some additional issues that the committee may want to address this year. As many of you know, the Renewable Development Fund came out of the 1994 compromise that allowed Xcel to store nuclear waste at its Prairie Island plant, in exchange for which the company began making contributions of $500,000 per cask stored at Prairie Island. Those contributions began flowing into the Renewable Development Fund in 1999. In 2008, they were joined by contributions from casks stored at the Monticello plant, $350,000 per cask, which are smaller than the ones at Prairie Island. And in 2018, we have a situation now where there are 44 casks at Prairie Island and 30 at Monticello. And the amount of money that will flow into the Renewable Development Fund in 2018 as a result is $32.5 million. This is charged to Xcel electric customers by means of a rider or a surcharge on each kilowatt hour of electricity consumed. And this year it amounts to about one-tenth of a penny per kWh, about 76 cents for the average residential Xcel consumer per month, or about $9 per year. Since 1999, when money first began coming into the fund, there's been a total of about $360 million that has been placed into the Renewable Development Fund. And the expenditures from that fund include about $80 million in grants over four grant cycles that were used for various projects, including both research and development and specific energy production projects. And as well, the legislature has from time to time made appropriations from the fund to support rebates and production incentives to customers who install renewable energy at their home or business. This includes the renewable energy production incentives, which supported mainly wind production, and also several solar projects, including Xcel Solar Rewards Project and the Made in Minnesota project as well. In 2017, new commitments from the fund were indicated by the legislature. Support will be going to both the Laurentian Power Authority and the City of Benson to help them make a transition from the termination of their contracts with Xcel to buy biomass energy from those two entities. As I said, in 2017, a number of changes were made in the bill that this committee passed, not the least important of which was to actually make the Renewable Development Fund a state fund. Previously, it had been kind of in limbo. Legislative auditor examined RDF in 2010 and made a recommendation that it be a state fund, as opposed to an unusual situation where the legislature is directing a private company to use its private revenues in certain ways. That's no longer the case. It's a state fund like any other fund. We also change, or the bill also changed the purposes of the fund for which the money is spent. Previously, there were four ways to spend that money. Increasing market penetration of renewables was one. Promoting startup and expansion of new companies and renewable projects. Stimulating R&D of renewables. And finally, developing near commercial and demonstration scale renewable electricity projects. Currently, that emphasis on R&D is still in there, but it's been joined by two new purposes. One is to encourage grid modernization, including energy storage and smart meters, and also a more general objective to stimulate innovative projects that reduce demand, and increase efficiency. Another change that was made last session was to add a representative from the Prairie Island Indian community to the advisory group that makes recommendations on spending from the Renewable Development Fund, since that group resides next door to where the Prairie Island casks are stored. And finally, and maybe of most important interest to this committee, another change made in 2017 was to have the legislature make final decisions on all spending in that fund. The legislature, with respect to the grant projects, the legislature can now approve or disapprove, but may not modify a project that is recommended by the advisory group and the Public Utilities Commission. There are some additional issues which need to be addressed in the fund. One is to allow payments from the fund to the to remunerate the administrative process of the fund. There's a third-party evaluator that reviews and evaluates all the incoming projects, and they need to be paid, obviously, and they'll now be paid. They'll be paid out of the fund when we indicate that that's going to be done. Also, we need to establish members of the advisory group and appointing authorities. Previously, this had been done by Xcel itself. Now, since it's a state fund, it has to be done by the state. And finally, there's a need for a mechanism to determine if a grant cycle is going to occur in the next year. Again, this was done kind of unilaterally by Xcel. I think they said when the fund reaches a balance of $20 million, there will be a grant cycle. We need a similar mechanism now in statute to automatically make a grant cycle happen. That concludes my testimony.
Well, thank you. And Mr. Zempel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so I'm going to go over briefly just kind of the cash flows, transferring the fund from Xcel Energy to the state of Minnesota. So we moved the fund to the state. We had to move resources. Xcel Energy now makes a deposit to management and budget every January based on the difference between the cask revenue, which this year was $32.5 million, and the obligations that Xcel has to pay out of the fund to Laurentian, Benson, Solar, and Solar Rewards. And in January, they deposited about $8.8 million into the fund, which was roughly $6.5 million less than expected due to a second payment to Laurentian coming out in 2018, rather than one of those payments coming out in 2017. The other source of revenue for the fund in fiscal year 2018 was a transfer from the Department of Commerce from the Made in Minnesota Solar account in their special revenue fund. At the end of session, we anticipated that the amount was to be $54.4 million. The Department of Commerce actually transferred $56.4 million because they paid out about $2 million less in production incentives than anticipated, bringing total revenues to $65.3 million for fiscal year 18. We have also appropriated funds in fiscal year 18. We have a $100,000 appropriation to the Department of Commerce to administer Made in Minnesota Solar until its end. We also have a forecasted appropriation to the Department of Commerce for Made in Minnesota Solar based on current contracts. These are production incentives. That production incentive was estimated at the end of session to be about $4.9 million for fiscal year 18. Updated in the November forecast, the Department of Commerce estimates those payments to be about $3.9 million for fiscal 18. We appropriated, not in this committee, $15 million to the City of Duluth for the steam plant retrofit, and $150,000 to the Department of Employment and Economic Development for a biomass study. After these expenditures, the budgetary balance in the fund at the end of the fiscal year will be $46.2 million. Next year, we anticipate the
Xcel Energy to transfer about $14 million to the fund and about that amount moving forward for the next 2 years.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee or comments? Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if you could walk me through, because I don't think I still understand the RDA. So I think you mentioned that we still have to appoint members.
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, Representative McQuaid, right now it doesn't say anybody appoints members. That's the problem.
Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, great. And then I want to understand the flow of receiving the projects and then who goes over them. Is it the PUC or is it the RDA? And then when the legislature gets them to say yes or no, are we getting them from the PUC or are we getting them from the RDA? I just want to understand that.
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, Representative McQuaid, right now, the way the statute reads, there is an advisory group that essentially consists of the same members that it was under Xcel, at least the representatives on it, who arrange with a third party to evaluate the projects that come in and hear all those projects and rank them, and then that advisory group makes recommendations as to which should be funded. The Public Utilities Commission essentially also makes recommendations as to what should be funded. And right now, both of those recommendations will be coming to the legislature, so the legislature can examine those before making its final determination of what projects should be funded.
Representative McQuaid.
Yikes. That was it.
Okay.
Yes.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've got a couple of questions. The PUC makes recommendations and the advisory committee from that the previous advisory committee, they both make recommendations and send them to the legislature, or does only one of them make recommendations and send that recommendation to the legislature?
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, right now the statute reads that each group makes recommendations.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, then so that I understand this correctly, how do we not, because that doesn't make any sense, because if we can't make changes to it, as of today, do we have to pick one group or the other group, or do we have to pick projects amongst that group? I mean, from both, and then send that forward. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the statute says that the legislature can approve or disapprove but may not modify the recommendations made by the commission.
Representative Mahoney.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Eloff, who's the commission? The
Public Utilities Commission.
Public Utilities Commission. Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I'm trying to understand, because this was your one of your bills, or you had some work within it. What was your intent to make those recommendations? Was it the PUC? Was it a new commission? Because I thought it was a new commission that was, I didn't realize we had to appoint or didn't appoint anybody, but what was your intent with your that legislation, that piece of legislation?
Sure. Well, Representative Mahoney, first of all, it was Representative O'Neill who led the point on this, and then this was contained in last year's omnibus bill. As part of the movement from this being private funds to being public funds, yes, there's increased accountability and transparency, but also now there has to be a public appointment process. Xcel can no longer just appoint the members necessary to it. So the intent, and I have to concede, I'll review, I thought the legislation, the way it read, was that the board made recommendations, the commission, the board made recommendations, and that the PUC either had to affirm or deny those recommendations, and then it came to the legislature for action. But I'm going to, I mean, it's a distinct possibility that it's not worded that way. That was my understanding of the law, and that was Representative O'Neill's intent on it. But we can double-check that. But, Mr. Eloff, you're saying that it actually allows for a separate series of recommendations, then that's what it says.
Well, Mr. Chair, with the understanding that I have from Mr. Eloff, it's unlikely that, I mean, it doesn't make sense in how we can actually appropriate any money out of that fund this year, because we would have to choose between one or the other. And I think we got a lot of work to do on this particular piece of legislation.
Well, so, Representative Mahoney, the advisory board doesn't exist yet.
Correct.
And the PUC, my understanding is the PUC can only take recommendations from the advisory board and forward them on to us. If I'm mistaken about that, I stand corrected, but I think it's fair to say that the Public Utilities Commission is not going to come up with their own recommendations and send them to us. If they are, that would be news to me, and I haven't heard of that. Notwithstanding the law as it exists, these are public funds under the jurisdiction of this committee. So if any member or the committee were to take action in appropriating these funds, they have to make sure that when the bill is drafted, they put notwithstanding current statutes such and such and such, and then recommend that a grant or incentive be coming out of this fund.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Eloff.
I'm sorry if I may have confused people and they have confused myself. I'm looking at the language again, and it says that the advisory group shall submit funding recommendations, well, to the public utility, meaning Xcel. The commission may approve proposed expenditures or disapprove them, and may, if agreed to by the public utility, modify those expenditures. The commission then submits its funding recommendations to the legislature. That's the way this reads now. So it's the same set of recommendations first being made by the advisory group to Xcel, to the commission, and then to the legislature.
Got that, Representative Mahoney? No? You can walk through it again. It's basically, the recommendations have to originate with the board or the council.
Correct. And there's no board just yet.
Correct. And then they go through the utility. The utility exists, but then it goes to the commission, and then the commission, in order for that recommendation to make it to the legislature, the commission has to positively take action on it.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney,
to Mr. Eloff, or whomever can answer this. What's available for the committee to write bills on at this particular time? What's the expected dollar figure in this fund for 2018?
Mr. Zempel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the current budgetary balance for fiscal 18 is $46.2 million.
Representative Mahoney. Do you have a question, Representative Mahoney, or?
So I just wanted to be clear that if someone was to write a bill out of that $46 million for energy improvements, they would have to put notwithstanding current law, correct?
Representative Mahoney, correct. As with other previous appropriations out of the Renewable Development Fund, the same way those were drafted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome, Representative Mahoney. Any other questions or comments from members? Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Eloff. Thank you, Mr. Representative Mahoney. I think I might have gotten my question back. It was definitely lost in between all of that. So two things. The first is so the board, when it gets created, they get the projects, and then from there they submit them to the utility. Does the utility then have the jurisdiction or authority, I should say, to pick through and say yes, no, yes, no, and then from the utility to the PUC to say is this good for ratepayers, is it needed, blah, 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 and then to the legislature for approval? Do I have that correct?
And Mr. Eloff, if you want to respond, or we do have Mr. Evans or Mr. Pearson here as well to respond if you wish.
Mr. Chair, Representative May Quaid, let me just read you the statute. The advisory group shall submit funding recommendations to the public utility, which has full and sole authority to determine which expenditures shall be submitted by the advisory group to the legislature. The commission may approve proposed expenditures, commission being the Public Utilities Commission,
may approve proposed expenditures, may disapprove proposed expenditures that it finds not to be in compliance with this subdivision. And the commission shall, by order, submit its funding recommendations to the legislature. So they're being filtered through different groups before they get here.
A little bit.
Representative McVeigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I guess my only other question, is there a penalty or anything that anybody faces if we don't do anything this year, since we don't have this board or advisory group?
Mr. Zempel or Mr. Rioff?
Mr. Chair, Representative McQuaid, no.
Representative McQuaid, any other follow-up?
No.
Representative Mahoney, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would seem that we have an opportunity to advise and consent on any members to this particular commission. So I would certainly advise the committee chair to exert his noteworthy negotiating skills to make sure that the House has advice and consent on anyone that gets added to this particular commission or appointed.
Well, Representative Mahoney, I think that all members of the committee, we're all equals, so we can all make recommendations that
I think you misunderstood me. I meant to the commission itself before they, you know, as not just to have the Senate do the advise and consent, seeing how we're the better, I mean, we're a different body, we should have our own say.
Understood. Any other questions or comments for members of the committee? House staff have any closing comments? Thank you very much for the overview. We greatly appreciate it. Members, we are not going to be meeting tomorrow. Tomorrow's meeting has been canceled, so keep your eyes on the emails for any changes in scheduling for next week, but you're free to take your free time to study the purview of this committee tomorrow. Do you need anything, Representative McGinnis? With that completes our agenda for the day, and our meeting is adjourned.